This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
31 seconds to go. From the Mississippi State 26-yard line, Hurts throwing over the middle. It is caught and spinning into the end zone, Devontae Smith. 25 seconds to go. Alabama's taken the lead.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Delivers a dart, intercepted. Look out. Trajan Bandy, the true freshman. Break out the chain again. First-half interception for Miami's defense.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
The essence of the game is deception sometimes. And they're great at it. Brady slides left, throws touchdown. James White into the end zone.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
It is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague alongside Andy Dirt Johnson. Happy Monday, everybody out. In the 360, the 503, the 971, and the 541.
We survived another beer excursion this weekend.
We did. We had a good week. We had a good weekend, man.
It was a great time at the Bendale Trail.
I want to throw this out because we have a lot to get to. That was a great weekend of football that we got in college. I thought there were some good NFL games. Like the early morning slate of games, they all came down to like one possession.
Which was a nice break from the week before where you had them all as blowouts at 10 a.m. games.
Absolutely. And we'll get to the Yusuf Nurkic, Terry Stotts stuff. We'll get to all that today. I wanted to start with an observation I made from our weekend in Bend. First, I didn't know this. Bend restaurants, like mom and pop places that serve breakfast, they don't believe in pepper. That threw me for a loop.
None of them had pepper?
I ate at three different restaurants for breakfast, and none of them had pepper on the table.
That's a little strange. You got it. Pepper is a staple of breakfast.
That's what I thought. Eggs, bacon, pepper, toast,
hash browns. You can put pepper on anything you eat in the morning.
Absolutely. So that was the first option. The second was, in regards to our trip, we did the Bendale Trail, and last time I'll ever say it, if you've never done it, and you like the craft beer scene, you're interested, go to Bend. It's always a great weekend. I highly recommend the Bendale Trail. They're fantastic. They're top-notch. They handle everything perfectly, and they just take you on these incredible tours. Well, we did the Bendale Trail, and we had a good time. We consumed a lot of booze.
Yes, we did.
And like every other year, we get to a point where you drink so much, and you eat appetizers, and you eat meals. You get full.
You can't handle it anymore.
Beer does that, right? Yeah. Dirt and myself, we stopped at the end of the tour. We went back to one of the breweries because we'd heard great things about their pizza. And we really liked a couple of their IPAs. So we went back there for dinner. We had a good meal. We had some good drinks. And he got to the point where it's, almost 8 o'clock. And we're like, oh, you know, we're just full.
Yeah, 7:38. We've been going for about 7.5 hours on IPAs and porters and you name it. The tank was full.
It's that Thanksgiving feeling where you can't help but kind of pass out. So you're like, all right, we got to get back.
Yeah.
So we go back and Dirk goes to his room. I go to my room. I basically didn't do much. I watched the Oregon State game in my hotel room. The wife and I stayed up probably till like 11, maybe midnight. And then we just passed out.
You made it that long?
Yeah. Well, we went back and we lounged a little bit.
Yeah, I passed out the second I got back to the room. I finished the Alabama-Mississippi State game. Next thing I know, I was KO'd, and I woke up at the half of the Oregon State-Arizona game, and I was pissed because I had Oregon State plus the 21, and it was 28-0 at the half. That was not pleasant to wake up to.
Well,
really? Are you kidding me?
A long way to get to this point that I'm making is we had another coworker named Derek, who he's a great guy, 94.7 nights. Is where you can catch him here in the building, and he's gone on these trips with us. He's actually the one I think he kind of started this idea, and it's fantastic. We have a great time. man, that guy, not only did he keep going.
He made it all night.
He, like, went all night. And yeah. I just don't know.
How you do it.
How do people get that energy?
I used to be able to do that. I used to be able to drink all day. Like, I'll think back to, like, college football games as a student at Oregon. That's a day-long thing. You wake up, you know, especially a 1 o'clock kick or something. You're drinking by 7 or 8 in the morning. You drink. You find a way to make it through the game, and then you go out afterwards. Like, I used to be able to handle that kind of workload.
No naps?
No nap involved. No, I used to just be able to go from one event to the other. It's no big deal. Not anymore. That kind of – I had one of those old fuddy-duddy moments. I'm not even that old. I just had one of those fuddy-duddy moments this weekend.
I said, get off my lawn.
It's like, I mean, you drink all day. It's like 7 hours of drinking, and it's great. It was awesome. All the beers were phenomenal. The breweries were great. Worthy was awesome. Bridge 99 was awesome. Ben Brewing Company we went to Boneyard. Like, we hit all these breweries, sampled all these great thick beers, and
10.5%.
Like, right. I mean, barrel-aged stuff, like the whole nine yards. And by the time 7 o'clock hit, I was done. I made it back to the hotel room, and I don't know how, because you told me you saw that he was, like, sending some Snapchats out at a bar doing karaoke at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, we're on Instagram as friends, and
I couldn't even imagine making it another hour and a half. Like, by the time we got done with dinner, I was like, okay, I need to make it back. I want to make sure that the Notre Dame and Miami game stays lopsided. If it didn't, I would have watched the end of that. I stuck around with TCU Oklahoma until I knew that game was over. And then, of course, you finished the Alabama-Mississippi State game, and then it was... We'll see you Sunday morning.
I just wanted to point out how I'm amazed. I think that's almost like sport worthy to me. People that can live their life that way. And it's not a knock. It's me being just outstanding. Standing ovation to right. You, sir.
Well done, man. Well done.
Because him and his friends, they go beast mode every year they do this.
Every single year.
And I'm just like, yeah, at some point, it's going to slow down. He's going to go back to the hotel room.
Right. He's got another year older. He's not going to be able to make it.
No. No, he continues to just chug along and do what he does, man. It's a sight to see. And I'm curious if other people out there have a friend like this where you're kind of in our boat of having a good time, but then you're just drained. And then your friend is just one of those people that isn't, I guess.
There's people like that, too, that you run into in life that it's not like you even like exclude the booze conversation. You know, the people that you just meet and they're always full of energy. And they're always talkative. They're always going. Like, there's, like, just an energizer bunny. And I look at people like that, too, and I'm like, do you ever get tired? Do you ever run out of gas? Like, I know a handful of people that just, no matter the time of day, no matter the time of year, no matter what their schedule's been like, you see them, and it's always go, go, go. They're always asking questions. It's rapid-fire talking. And sometimes, don't you ever just want to take a step back, relax, take a nap, man?
Yeah, I'm a big nap guy.
Kick your feet up.
Firmly believe in the nap.
Take it easy.
As a guy that is a firm believer in that, I don't understand how those individuals can do that.
I don't get it. The energy level is amazing.
Like, I wake up really early, and, you know, I got two kids, so there's a lot that goes on within my day. But after a show, I have to take a 20-minute nap.
Yeah, you do. You got to just...
I go in my car.
Unplug it for 20 minutes, replug, you're good to go.
I need that in my life.
Yeah, I'm a little European in you.
But it was a great time. I'm amazed by our coworker, and I highly recommend Bend. It was a top-notch. But here is the beauty of us going on a brewery tour. We got to check out a bunch of different college football games at a bunch of different stops.
Yeah, and every level was like a different level of drunk. Like every spot, it was like a new drunk take. Like, oh my God, are you watching what Miami's doing right now? Or
so when we got to Boneyard, Boneyard was the last stop we made on our tour. And if you've never been to Boneyard in Bend, it'll kind of blow your mind because you realize they have maybe just beers on tap at restaurants, bars. They might have the number one beer in the state with their RPM. And then you go to the facility, and I'm not kidding when I say this. It looks like your uncle's shed in the backyard. It's perfectly fine. You walk in. The people are great. Customer service was perfect. But you just would never suspect that that facility is housing maybe the number one beer in our state.
Right.
So you walk in there, and as we get off the bus to go into Boneyard, this guy comes roaring out of Boneyard, hand in his phone, and he's like, ah! And he's got, like, glasses, beard, puffy coat, looks like your prototypical Portland hipster. And he just storms out. And everybody in the group is like, whoa, what's that guy on?
That's a powerful beer. Was he drinking gasoline in there? What's going on?
That's kind of what we were saying. And he finally does like a big turnaround and he comes screaming back to us and he slows down and he starts walking because he realizes the whole group's looking at him and judging him and questioning. And he drops a, sorry, my Florida State Seminoles just got a big turnover.
And we talked Florida State football with him for like 10 minutes.
And I didn't want to say it, but I was like, dude, I'd have never pegged you as a diehard football fan.
No, it was not. Like, if you judged a book by its cover, you would say that guy does not watch sports. If he does, it's probably cross country or European soccer. And he was just the most diehard Florida State fan. And he went to Florida State, too.
Yeah, he's like my school. And I was like, oh, okay.
He's a fish out of water, man. How'd you end up in Bend, Oregon from Tallahassee, Florida? How the hell does that happen?
And I want to say not 5 minutes later, as we walked into Boneyard standing in line to get our samples, that same individual was absolutely crushed because he watched them throw an interception like three plays later.
Yeah, the excitement was followed up with a son of a. We look over, it's like, oh, Florida State must have choked again. They must have found a way to lose to Clemson.
I think I consoled him by patting him on the back and I go, hey, hey, at least they covered. And he goes, you know what? You're right.
You're right, man. That's right. That's all we got this year. Just rooting for covers every single weekend.
So it was a good time for us. We got to watch all the football games. I missed the early slate, like the first quarter and a half of the early slate games in the NFL, but gotten home in time to watch pretty much the rest of those. And then the afternoon and obviously the New England Denver game. But it's a good weekend of football, my man. Good weekend in general.
It really was. We've had a couple of these now in a row. I mean, we knew all the matchups going into college football. And it's funny, sometimes you think about, and we've done this a couple of times where you look at certain matchups and say, that's going to be the one we all want to watch. And then something else completely different ends up happening. I don't think many people pegged Auburn with a chance to beat Georgia. We all thought Notre Dame-Miami was going to be this great classic showdown, and they end up blowing them out. You get Washington and Stanford on Friday night. It's like, who saw that coming? So it was a great weekend, and I'm just glad we got some close games in the NFL, because the week before, a lot of blowouts, a lot of snoozers. I know Sunday Night Football sucked, but outside of that, it was a really good day in the NFL yesterday.
All right, we're on Twitter, at Dirt and Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, and at Brandon Sprague. We'll come back with the poll questions, but coming up next, Washington goes down on Friday night, and the narrative is as predictable as ever, and I'm absolutely tired of it. That's next. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan. The Washington Huskies fell on Friday night to Stanford 30-22. Bryce Love rushed for 166 yards, three touchdowns. And to me, Dirt, it's not so much the Huskies' loss that stands out. It's more the narrative that pops up after that, that I just kind of roll my eyes and call out the word predictable. And I wasn't stunned at all. You know, I decided to log on to Twitter, which is never a good idea if you're drinking and just not in a mood to want to tweet. And I saw it four or five different times. I see an article this morning on the San Jose Mercury about how Friday night is just, it's being ruined. The Pac-12's ruining itself with these Friday night games, and all these teams are 0-4 on Friday night. And I just kind of chuckle. I would rather you just be an honest homer and tell me you're pissed because your Washington Huskies or the team you thought was going to represent the Pac-12 missed the playoff versus trying to make an argument to me that Friday night is what screwed these teams. Did it screw Stanford in that game?
Right, they were playing on a short week too.
Yeah, and I believe they were coming off their Washington State weekend, right?
Yes, they were up in Pullman. They lost a tough physical game to Washington State and then had to play on a short week.
And Washington was at home, so okay, there's your narrative of back-to-back road games. Let's see. You look at the schedule. Oh, did Washington State's opponent, when they, who was that, Cal? Did Cal beat them? They had to play that same night, right?
Yeah, they both played on a Friday.
And I believe Washington State played against USC when USC lost on a Friday night.
That they did. They beat USC on a Friday night.
So it only seems to really matter if a certain team loses in this matchup. Yeah. Did it bother Clemson last year when they had to play on a Friday night at Boston College? Because I think they won by 46 and still got to the playoff and ultimately won the title. I'm just tired of the narrative. Is the Pac-12 perfect? It absolutely isn't. But stop with this complaining of what night you play. The other team has to play too. If you're an elite team, prove it and win a game. The Pac-12 has proven what they've been doing all year. They're a little fraudulent, and they're not among some of the best in college football.
A lot of good teams, not an elite team. We felt that way all season long, and it was just vindicated with Washington going down. If there was a complaint about the Pac-12 out of this game, it was the TV situation. Like, that's a valid one. And I think Larry Scott needs to look in the mirror and figure out how to keep that from happening again. Because we got to the hotel, right about at 7:30, right when this game was starting. We realized that the hotel didn't have Fox Sports 1 as one of their channels. So I'm like, all right, I got to rush to a bar. I want to watch this game. It was a big Friday night game.
Well, you're in for a treat.
I went to the bar, and it's like, where the hell is the football? Why isn't it starting? What's going on? Wait, it's on FS2. Do we even have FS2? Why are we watching
truck racing?
Why are we watching truck racing for an hour? Like, if there is an argument against what the hell is the Pac-12 doing, it's how a TV situation like that can unfold. Because if I'm correct in this, I believe both Seattle and Portland do not have Fox Sports 2.
Not through Comcast.
And basically the entire first half of that game was aired on Fox Sports 2. So you're looking in the Seattle market. Imagine how frustrated Ducker Beaver fans would be. I know you go through this with the Pac-12 Network. But imagine being in a situation where you couldn't watch the first half of a pretty marquee game. This was a big game for Washington on the road against Stanford. That was laughable, and it's inexcusable for the conference. But I saw the same thing on Friday. Like, there was an SI writer that tweeted that out, that the Pac-12 screwed itself over
by scheduling these
Friday night games. Look at that. USC went down. Washington State went down. Washington went down. It's ridiculous. Like, the reality of the situation is I'm higher on the Pac-12 than some, and I still am. I think it's a good conference. There's just not an elite team. We felt this way all year. And I remember when Washington lost to Arizona State, a lot of people wanted to say that they were the conference was dead. They didn't have a chance to make it in. I said, if Washington wins out, they can make it in. I just didn't trust them to win out. That showed me that they're not good enough to handle some of these situations. They went on the road. They lost because Stanford played Stanford football. They ran the ball. They controlled the clock. And Jake Browning has not been good. He's having a down year this year. Offensively, it's not a good football team. And they turned the ball over. Stanford didn't. There's a lot of reasons why Washington lost that game. Playing on a Friday was not one of them.
Yeah, I think when you're trying to defend the Pac-12 as a conference, that's fine. I'm a Pac-12 junkie just like anybody else. I want the conference to be in the playoff, and 2 out of the 3 years they have been. But if you look around, you see this landscape of, you mentioned the Sports Illustrated writer. Again, the one I'd cited is John Wilner, who's a fantastic Pac-12 writer for the San Jose Mercury News. He likes to have fun, and he wrote a kind of a fun piece today on the Pac-12. I don't think he was dead serious about it, but there's just that now there's this overreaction of, well, look how Larry Scott is screwing the conference. Look how the conference is just costing itself. Were we saying that 2 of those 3 years they made the playoff? The year Oregon made it, did we say that? No. Washington last year, did we say that? No. I get tired of this. And this happens not only in the Pac-12, but you see this in other conferences, divisions, and some schools. That if they lose a game like a Friday night, they point the finger elsewhere. You know, somebody's saying, but how come you hate Thursday night football? And how different is it than Friday night football? The reason I hate Thursday night football is, one, it's an extra day of rest versus
it's
college.
One day. Yeah, it's one more day's difference.
One less day of rest, I should say. And I just think the NFL, that's the premier sport. You shouldn't be playing football on Thursdays. That's just a different conversation to me. But even the Friday thing, you want to make the argument that, well, yeah, but they're still not rested all the way and their bodies haven't healed either. Sure, no doubt. But Stanford played that game just fine. And by the way, you only lost by 8. It wasn't like you got railroaded by 45 points. You were in that game. You had opportunities to win that game and you were leading and you couldn't handle it. That's my whole point. Washington is a really, really good team. I picked them to win the conference and go to the playoff. They may still win the conference. The playoffs seems basically impossible for them. But I can even sit here admitting with an opinion of wanting to see Washington prove me right, you're just not elite. You're not. And I don't know if there is an elite team. Maybe USC, in your opinion, could be. But even USC, it's tough for me to listen to that argument. So I'm all about the Pac-12 being in the playoff. I get why people maybe don't like Friday night games. Stop using that as the excuse for the team losing. The other teams have played just fine when they win, so.
Right, we don't use it as an excuse for Cal hanging 37. Well, they were playing on a short week. Well, why were they able to hang 37 on Washington State on a Friday night game? I'm of the opinion that if you play any of those three games on a Saturday, there's not a difference. If you wait one more day, I still think Washington State beats USC. I still think Stanford beats Washington. And the way Washington State did not show up to that game against Cal, which is still a head-scratcher to me because of how good of a football team they are, they're going to lose that game on a Saturday. One more day is not going to change the outcome, in my opinion, of any of those three games. I think just in terms of the football performance from Washington this weekend, I don't want to say it was an indictment on the season of Jake Browning, but you just go back and look at some of the numbers, because I was curious, because he had a monster year last year. He was a stud, and he was one of the key reasons why they were able to make the college football playoff. at this pace, so they have two games left in the regular season. If they beat Washington State, they'll end up going potentially to the Pac-12 championship game. They still have a chance to get there.
Stanford will probably get
but
there, though.
Right, it depends on how Stanford plays the last couple of games. But just at this point, with two games left in the regular season, he's 27 touchdowns behind where he was last year, and he's 1,400 yards behind where he was last year.
Is that
right? Jake Browning from last year to this year, he's 1,400 yards behind where he was. Which, I mean, he's got two games to make up that gap.
He's not making up 27
touchdowns. But he's not making
up
27 touchdowns and 1,400 yards. And wow. You look at their last four games, when the schedule's gotten really tough for them, I mean, granted, Oregon didn't have Herbert. You played UCLA and Rosen went down. But some of the Arizona State, I think, is a decent team. You had to play them on the road. And then the Stanford game, they're 2-2 in their last four games. He has two touchdowns, two picks. He's only topped 200 yards one time in the last four games. Like, this has been an issue we've been pointing to with Washington all season long. The defense is great. The defense is great. We know how good they are. Statistically, as good as anybody in the country. We've been asking all season, what's wrong with the offense, and at what point does it come back to bite them if they can't figure it out? And I think that was, again, the case. They were able to run the ball pretty efficiently, but it was third down conversions. They weren't great. The turnover hurt them. And then when Stanford would get the football, they wouldn't give it back. It was the typical time of possession. I think it was 36 minutes to 23 in favor of Stanford. Oregon State fans have been there. Oregon fans have been there. If you played Stanford over the last 6 years, we've all seen that kind of performance where you punt it to them and they're not going to give it back to you for 6-7 minutes and they're going to find a way to score.
God, those numbers blow my mind.
Yeah, go
are
look
you
at
sure
the
it's 27 touchdowns? 20,
he threw, hold on, let me bring up his season.
That's just such a huge number.
Right? He has 16 touchdowns this season. He threw 43 last year.
So let's take away the playoff game.
Which I don't know if he had a touchdown in the playoff game, did he?
I can't remember how they scored.
He probably threw three or four of those in the Pac-12 title game. I'll give him credit for that, but I can't remember those numbers off the top of my head.
His numbers in the Pac-12 game weren't amazing.
He had 3,400 yards and 43 touchdowns last year, and this year he has just over 2,000 yards and 16 touchdowns.
Well, and that's why, you know, for people that are wondering, hey, Washington falls off, I don't think there's any chance Browning leaves. Why would he?
At this point, no. I mean,
what
after
would an
this
NFL
kind
team
of
want with Jake Browning after this year?
Yeah, he threw to put it in context, his freshman year, he had 16 touchdown passes, and we all thought, all right, growing year, 16 touchdowns, 10 picks. He has 16 touchdowns with two games to go this year.
You know, you could probably make the argument, Dirt, he might be the reason they're not undefeated or just one loss. Because
go back and look at the numbers against Arizona State, and I know he was 17 of 23, so efficiency wasn't awful against Stanford, but he didn't make big plays when they needed him to.
Efficiency doesn't always mean much.
No.
We do that in the NFL sometimes to guys like Alex Smith, where he's efficient, but people don't think he makes the big enough play.
Right.
I would just say their running backs are pretty damn talented. Their offensive line hasn't been horrid, and we know how good their defense is, as you pointed out. He may be like the reason you look back and go, why weren't they a playoff team? He didn't play very well.
No.
And I don't know. Maybe it's the post-injury. I don't know what it is, but you're right. Jake Browning's been very weird this year. Very un-Jake Browning from what we saw a season
when
ago.
You expect guys to take that progression. He did it from his first year to his second year, where the year one, it's a freshman type of season. Sophomore year, you explode onto the scene with 43 touchdowns. And you expect him to take that next step, and it just hasn't happened this year.
All right, let's get to the other college football games from the weekend. Georgia falls big. Wisconsin keeps rolling. Mississippi State had Bama on the ropes. Oklahoma with a statement win. And is everyone buying into Miami? We'll talk some more college football next. There's an old man. Hey, just a reminder for you. A week from tomorrow is going to be our fan Civil War party out at Big Al's in Beaverton. Isaac and Suk doing a show out there. We'll have Coors Light specials, apps, duck and beaver gear to raffle off. Tate, my man from Hoodies Collectibles, will be out. We'll have tickets to the Civil War itself. It's going to be a good time.
And I'll be apparently dressed as a Oregon State cheerleader.
Yes, I actually am hoping that the outfit is delivered this week.
Okay, nice. Is it a female cheerleader outfit?
Yeah.
I don't get to wear the pants and like the deep V-neck. No. Get the bullhorn.
Sorry,
oh,
no.
Yes, you. No, doesn't work that way.
You might get the blowhorn. Maybe we get something like that for you.
Pom-poms? Do I have to carry pom-poms around?
I think so. You going to shave? You shave those legs?
No, I'm not shaving my legs.
I'll do this for you.
Not happening.
It was already a ridiculous bet, as most of these will be.
Yeah.
Like midway through the event, go change.
Okay, I appreciate
Just
that.
Make sure we get a picture.
And yeah, get a couple photo ops. Beaver fans want to take their picture with me. Go for it if you are into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I'll put some normal clothes on. Well, because, I mean, look, it's a party. Let's be honest. Nobody wants to see that. No.
You're just drinking, you're eating, yeah. Things are going on, you're trying to have a good time, and you don't want to see me in a cheerleader outfit.
Exactly.
Nobody needs that in their life.
Tickets to that fun event, 1080thefan.com, only $10.80. Hurry up. Next Tuesday, we'll be out at Big Al's in Beaverton.
This will be my last day to hate Mark Helfrich, by the way. Damn you, Mark.
Yeah, then you can move on.
Then I'll move on officially.
Really good points at the Bridgeport Beers text line at 55305. We're talking about Washington losing to Stanford, and somebody said, you know, maybe he misses John Ross more than people thought. Yeah.
John Ross was a stud.
It was pretty damn impressive to have a guy stud. Like
well,
that.
Well, didn't he lose Chico Mc not catching the ball anymore?
Dynamite drop in, Monty.
Mick. How many Micks did you just drop?
I don't know, four or five.
That was a lot of Micks right there.
Yeah, I mean, look.
McClatchery, thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
You lose some weapons, sure. I mean, yeah, a lot of guys have to go through that, but that's attrition. That's college football. You still shouldn't. I mean, this is a drastically big difference.
Well, and that was the thing, I think, that some folks argued. Like, I didn't think Washington was going to make. I picked Washington State to win the North. I thought Washington lost too much talent. But I think a lot of the folks who took Washington, you hung your hat on the fact that, yes, they're losing talent, but you have Browning coming back for another year. Like, that's what you see quarterbacks go through. Like, sure, you have talent early in your career, and that's going to help. But even if you lose guys, you should be good enough to develop the talent around you. And the numbers should not fall off a cliff like they've done this year. And I remember going back early in the year, first couple of weeks, we had a lot of Pac-12 guests on, a lot of college football analysts on. It's always fun to do those rankings of top five this or that. And we asked a number of people, the top five quarterbacks in the Pac-12, go ahead and rank them. And there were a handful of them that left Jake Browning either out of the top five or out of their top four. And people were like up in arms about that. Like, how are you leaving Jake Browning out of that conversation? How are you not putting him there? And I think as the year's gone on, whoever would leave him out of their top four, there's more evidence mounting that they knew what they were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, somebody says, funny how we want parity in the NFL, but when there's parity in the Pac-12, the conference is garbage. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's garbage. It's just, it sucks not to have an elite team. That's what hurts your conference.
I think Washington's good. Washington State's good. I think USC's
good. Stanford's
good.
USC's good. Yeah.
I think Arizona's a good team.
And that's about it.
I think you have I think then there's a category of teams that on any given Saturday can win a random game, like Arizona State or Utah, or even Cal's done it a couple of times this year. But what holds it down is there's not that Clemson or there's not that Miami that's risen to the top.
Well, we had a good week in a college football outside of the Washington loss. There were a couple blowouts, but this one actually was well. Let's start with number one, Georgia falling to Auburn 40-17. Auburn's defense held Georgia's rushing attack to 46 total yards on the ground. Now they get a non-conference cupcake.
Of course.
Well, it's the SEC.
That's the way they operate.
And then they play the Iron Bowl in Auburn against Alabama.
Yeah, they get Alabama at home. This to me was, it had to be the statement of the weekend. I know Auburn was there at number 10, and it wasn't like this was an upset that nobody saw coming. The dominant fashion in which they won this game. Like, it was a bloodbath. It was, 16-7 at the half. By halfway through the third quarter, this game was over. And I don't think, maybe you saw Auburn pulling an upset, but nobody saw that kind of win coming. And you go back and you look at Auburn's schedule. I remember I watched a lot of that game against LSU that they lost. They had no business losing that game.
Yeah, you should have won.
They were up somewhere in the neighborhood of 20-0 or 20-3. They were dominating. LSU pulled a rabbit out of the hat and found a way back in to win it. Outside of that, the only other loss that Auburn has this year is a 14-6 loss to Clemson. Now they have this win to claim, and I think this was the curveball that the committee did not want to see, because you have the scenario now of a two-loss Alabama, one-loss Georgia, and an undefeated Alabama, and all of them have to play each other again.
Well, you know, to go back to a point you've been on for a couple weeks, you argue about a two-loss team getting in. I think if Auburn can beat Alabama,
they're in. They have to.
Well, and then they beat Georgia again in the SEC title game. I don't know how you leave an Auburn out.
You can't. You can't have a win over Georgia, Alabama, Georgia again in the span of a month and not have that team make the playoffs.
Because even if it's a two-loss and you can make an argument, oh, this one-loss team's more worthy, at that point you had beaten Georgia twice and Alabama, you couldn't tell me that Auburn's not one of the four best teams in college football.
Yeah, it would be the reverse of Penn State, Ohio State last year. That Penn State was the conference champ with two losses, but we wonder, was the strength of schedule good enough? Did they have the quality wins that they needed outside of one game? Auburn's going to have plenty of them if they do that.
Yeah, and you just kind of wonder how people maybe view Georgia a little bit. Not to say Georgia was a fraud, because they're not by any means, but you go look at the schedule and you kind of just wonder if they will get to the SEC title game. When they get there, if it's Bama, if it's maybe Auburn again, how they're going to stack up. Because
it's one thing to lose a close one on the road. It's another to go on the road and just get worked like that.
Well, and that's actually kind of a trend of this year's college football slate. You look at that Georgia-Auburn game. That was an example of it. A game, well, I'm sure we'll get to today. It was the Notre Dame-Miami game. Same thing happened to them. I even look back to USC-Notre Dame. I mean, that was a marquee game. USC went on the road, and things just snowballed. And I think that was the case for all of these teams, that you're going into a really tough environment to play. You're playing a really good football team on the road. And if you find yourself down 14-0 or 17-3 early in the ball game, you get out of your game plan, you start trying to throw haymakers to get back into the fight, and things can get out of control. I don't think it's an indictment on Georgia. I think it's a damn good football team. They could still win the SEC and make the college football playoff if Alabama wins and then they beat Alabama in the SEC title. I don't think it's an indictment on Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame's a good football team. Things just snowballed. They turned the ball over too much. And I think we've learned our lesson with USC. Remember when they lost that game to Notre Dame and they got blown out? We said, they're a fraud. Look what they've done the last couple of weeks. They blew out Arizona. They blew out Arizona State. Another big win against Colorado on the road this weekend. Like, I think we overreact sometimes to just teams getting worked on the road. It's been one of the themes of the season.
Well, one team you didn't mention there, Wisconsin. They continued their winning ways, pulling away and eventually dominating Iowa in Madison. Same thing with Georgia happened to Iowa, except way worse. Iowa had 66 total yards. Yeah, not 66 yards on the ground, not 66 yards through the air. 66 total yards in the game. And now you just got to think Wisconsin's looking at Ohio State, presumably, and they're just waiting for the Big Ten title game and licking their chops. Because I don't know, man. Wisconsin has me feeling very strange, where I think I know them, but I don't think I really do. Where they get to a Big Ten title game and they play, let's say, Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. Which now, it looks like it's going to be.
Which, yeah, and everybody's back in Ohio State now because they recovered and they had a blowout win for themselves. And Wisconsin, like, can beat Ohio State. It's such a strange team because their schedule's been so terrible.
If they beat Ohio State, that ends the conversation if they haven't beaten anybody. That's the problem
they've
right now.
They've also only at that point, you could make the argument they've only beaten one team.
Yeah, I mean, I think Iowa's a quality football team, but you had a little bit of the
hangover. But they're going to fall out of the top 25.
Right. You had the hangover effect, I think. I mean, Iowa was coming off a program-changing win over Ohio State, and one of their biggest wins in a long time. And
if they beat Michigan and then Michigan loses to Ohio State, they're not in a top 25. They would have one win.
You would have one win over a top 25 team. But I think Ohio State's going to win out, so that's going to be a quality win. And they're number 8 in the country right now. They're only going to keep rising if they win Ohio State, that is, their last couple of games, or last two games. So Wisconsin has always been that conversation of it's almost like going back to Iowa a couple of years ago when they were 12-0 and then they lost the Big Ten title game. We can all sit here and have differing opinions on them. If you win out, you're in. Like Wisconsin, if they win out, they're in the college football playoff.
That's not even a debate.
No. And I don't think many will argue it. If you're undefeated in the Big Ten, you win the Big Ten title game over a good Ohio State team, you belong in, and nobody's going to question your merit. It's about going out and proving it against somebody else in college football. The disaster scenario, I think, would be Wisconsin winning their last two and Ohio State winning like a close Big Ten title game, because then again, you have the reverse of last year. You have Wisconsin with one close loss like Ohio State, but you have Ohio State as the Big Ten champ, but they have two losses.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a difference there. I'll tell you what that is. Also, did Baker Mayfield all but clinch the Heisman Trophy this weekend? And how about Miami? A lot of people wondered if the clock was going to strike midnight on the Hurricanes, but Mark Richt has those kids playing some good football. They obliterate Notre Dame on primetime TV. We'll talk about the Canes and Oklahoma next on The Fan. We've got our NFL whip around coming at 1 o'clock, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Dallas Cowboys. I was not surprised at all that performance yesterday. And then also their owner continues to go back and forth with Roger Goodell. And then we'll talk about Yusuf Nurkic and the Terry Stotts beef. Or maybe not beef. Maybe beef.
Who's sad are you on, Nurkic or Stotts?
One of them saying they're on the same side, but I don't know if I believe that. They also have a game against the Denver Nuggets tonight. So we'll get into all that in the second hour. But we're talking some college football. It's a good weekend of college football. We had some upsets. And you also had teams like Oklahoma, who had a huge game at home hosting TCU. And I think Baker Mayfield did it dirt. I really think he clinched kind of the Heisman Trophy. Another game, 300-plus yards throwing, multiple touchdowns. And it was close early, but Oklahoma went up two scores and they never looked back. They beat the Horned Frogs 38-20.
Yeah, 38-14 at the half. I mean, we're crossing your fingers. Maybe TCU can make it entertaining in the second half, but that didn't happen. They shut them out in the third quarter. you're up 38-14 going into the fourth. They were on cruise control. And, you know, Mayfield, he's going to win the Heisman, and I don't have a problem with that. I think it's a good combination of a team that likely at this point is going to be in the college football playoff as long as they can beat TCU again in a Big 12 title game. But you also have that mixed in with Baker Mayfield is a stud, and the numbers back up the kind of year he's had. And you can credit him for a couple of wins. I mean, I go back to that Kansas State game in my mind that they weren't playing great as a team. He had one of those huge performances to lead him back to win on the road. He got a win at Ohio State. The numbers he put up against Oklahoma State, granted they have a bad defense, but those were ridiculous. And then again, against TCU, a team that was playing as good a defense really as anybody in the country, he had 333 yards and 3 touchdowns in that game. So, I mean, they lit him up. Oklahoma, I think, the last 2 weeks, they needed those wins after their loss to Iowa State to just kind of reaffirm their status as a college football playoff contender. Now they just have the difficult task, likely, and unless something crazy happens, of beating a team twice. I think that's really difficult. We've seen it a lot in college football where you can win a game in the regular season and you have to play them again, and it's just a different matchup because the team's able to change up what they do. But with Iowa State losing this weekend, it looks like it's going to be Oklahoma-TCU again in the Big 12 title game. So we're going to get another matchup of top 10 caliber teams.
Yeah, it's weird because I think it's great for their schedule, their resume, et cetera. You know, you beat TCU twice for Oklahoma's sake, hypothetically here. I also don't know if I like that. I wish they'd just add a couple teams. I don't like that you play the same team twice. It happens. It's the Big 12. Well, there's nothing you can do about it. But it's still, you know, you look at it and say, is there another team you'd want to see Oklahoma play? Like, do you, if the season were to end this way, do you think TCU is the second best team?
Yes, I do. In the Big 12? Yes, I do.
And it's weird because I'm not 100% sure on that. I got to give them the benefit because they beat Oklahoma State, but it's weird that Oklahoma State can drop 52 on Oklahoma and then TCU only scores 20.
Yeah, I don't look at it that way. I mean, they beat Oklahoma State handily at Oklahoma State. I mean, that game was never really close. So you got to give them the benefit of the home field, and they lost to Iowa State. It was one of those weird games where they turned the ball over a bunch, and Iowa State's a quality football team, and they lost 14-7. They had a dozen chances to tie that game or take the lead, and they just couldn't do it. So outside of that, yeah, I mean, they have the head-to-head win over West Virginia, over Oklahoma State. That's just the weird part. You play everybody in the regular season, you got to go play them again. But
it's old-school Pac-10.
It is. And in the Pac-10, they used to have a conference title game, which would have shaken things up a bunch. But you could get it in the SEC, too. I mean, if Auburn beats Alabama,
that's true.
You're going to get a rematch of Auburn and Georgia again in the SEC title game.
Yeah, you're right. That's the crazy part. But Oklahoma, man, they look good right now. Baker Mayfield is balling. I think he's the Heisman favorite. And oh, by the way, the one everybody wanted to be there, I'm not even sure he's going to get an invite. I don't think Saquon Barkley's worthy of an invite.
He got shut down. I mean, I think he ended up with a couple of touchdowns, but his numbers,
he had like 30 yards.
His numbers, again, were not good this weekend.
No, his numbers on the ground are not impressive.
No.
But all right, let's go to the other game. Notre Dame, Miami. This was a big primetime matchup, and you and I were pretty pumped to watch this, and aesthetically pleased me a lot. I loved seeing the golden helmets in Miami and seeing the orange, and boy, they just blew it out quick. 27-0 at the half. And I felt like every player wore the turnover chain.
Yeah, they had, I think, 4 turnovers? I think they ended up with a couple of picks, a couple of fumbles. Yeah, 4 turnovers for Notre Dame. They were handing the chain out left and right. And that was the only disappointing part of the weekend, was you had these marquee games at night in Miami and Notre Dame and then Oklahoma TCU. They were both blowouts. I mean, one was 38-14 at the half, and this one was 27-0 at the half. And I saw Suk tweet this weekend. I think a lot of people have to do it. Just apologizing to Miami. I think a lot of people thought Miami was a fraud. They were winning a lot of close games over teams that were inferior to them, playing down to competition. And then the last 2 weeks, they played the 2 toughest games on their schedule in Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. And there wasn't a doubt in either of them. They dominated Virginia Tech for 4 quarters. And then to do that to Notre Dame, Notre Dame was playing great football, beating a lot of good teams. I think Notre Dame's a really good football team this year, and they just smoked them. The turnovers are working, and I think you have to consider Miami in that conversation. They might be, after their last 2 wins, they're going to feel like they have a stake to be the number 1 team in the college football playoff ranking tomorrow night.
Yeah, something I couldn't help but think about as well. A listener points out at 55305, how great does Mark Richt feel? Dominates Notre Dame the same day Georgia gets blasted. Fan base was absolutely a bunch of jackasses to him.
Here he is, 9-0, and they're already booked in the ACC title game. That's it. It's going to be Clemson and Miami.
Yeah, keep telling me how he's an overrated coach. I'll be sitting here all day listening to that. I'd hire that dude in a second.
God.
Not only did they just win that game, to win it in that fashion, Notre Dame's a good football team. And they got embarrassed. I still think Notre Dame is a great football team. And Miami came out ready to play, ready to prove a point. And that's exactly what they did.
Well, I think the biggest thing for Miami the last couple of weeks is we knew their defense could force a lot of turnovers. That's been one of the fun things of college football, the chain that they hand out on the sideline when they get a turnover. But to hold Notre Dame to 261 total yards, only 109 rushing yards, Notre Dame had one of the best rushing attacks in all of college football. And really the blueprint was there for them, and they felt like if they could get an early lead, you force Notre Dame out of their comfort zone. I mean, Notre Dame's one of those teams they like to play from ahead because of how well they run the football. And when you get in that situation, they had to throw the ball. They threw three picks and a fumble. So, I mean, when you jump on them 14-0 like that, Notre Dame had to change their game plan a little bit. They got turnover happy, and then Miami just absolutely blew the doors off.
Somebody makes a good point. If Washington State wins the North, you do get a rematch with USC.
Very true. You get it in the Pac-12 as well.
If we get a rematch in the...
Or even Stanford, because Stanford played USC too.
Yeah, because if Washington wins and Stanford wins out, Stanford will win the North.
Yeah.
If the Big 12 is a rematch, do you think TCU can make it a better game?
I do.
Or do you think Oklahoma's... I wonder if Oklahoma's just too good right now.
Well, they're playing really good right now. There's no doubt. You look at TCU...
Where's that game being played, by the way?
I believe it's in Dallas.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, they're on the road in Norman, so that's a tough... I mean, just you got to... Maybe that game's slightly different if they're playing at TCU, but... There's just something weird about those kind of games. I mean, remember back to the one that always sticks out in my mind is the title game between Alabama and LSU. We were all ticked that it was a rematch because we had seen it before. Alabama got beat at home in the regular season by LSU. Granted, it was ugly SEC football 9-6, but you go to the title game, Alabama blew them out. I mean, there's just something weird about that rematch factor when you're not on the road. You know how to game plan better. You know what the other team's going to try and do against it. You can change things up a little bit. I don't think I would pick Oklahoma to win that game, but not by dominating fashion.
All right. So good weekend of college football. Hey, coming up in hour two, should Terry Stotts be on the hot seat? Is Yusuf Nurkic mentally tough enough to overcome the latest storyline? We'll get to both of those. The Cowboys look absolutely terrible without Ezekiel Elliott, all the while their owner is going at it with the commissioner. But we're going to kick off hour two with our NFL whip around. Next, Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.